G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway Podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone. Thanks to those that have been booking in with me for the private one-on-one coaching. It's been very uplifting and it's been so great to help so many people in such a short space of time. If you do want to get some one-on-one coaching and some advice from me, you're just struggling a bit, or you might want to get going, or you might have a few issues in maintenance, come and have a chat to me. You can do that in private by going to the website www.thefastinghighway.com, click on coaching, get help, and book a time with me. All times you see will be in your local time zone and a relevant charge is there. That's www.thefastinghighway.com to book in for the private one-on-one coaching with me. Okay, folks, let's get on with today's podcast. G'day, and this is episode 166. And I'm absolutely thrilled this week to be talking to someone that should inspire us all. And I'm speaking of Karen Hobson. And what's special about Karen is that she's 80 years of age and she lives in Poole's Bar, Washington, in the United States of America. And Karen began her intermittent fasting journey later in life at age 75. And she's never looked back. And now she's living her best life. And she's going to relay her story here, which I'm sure is going to inspire us all. And I'm not going to spoil it for you. So here she is to tell it, is the absolutely amazing Karen Hobson. Oh, g'day, Karen, and welcome to the Fasting Highway. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Graham. Well, I'm welcome to be here. It's nice.
Fantastic. Lovely to have you here. You're a very inspiring member of our Fasting Highway Facebook community. And we thank you for that. But Karen, for those around the world listening to the podcast in some 49 countries, if you wouldn't mind sharing a bit of your backstory, any issues you had with health and weight during your life and the experience that you've had, and sort of how you found your pathway later in life to intermittent fasting.
Okay. Well, I've always had weight problems. Not gigantic. I think maybe 160 pounds was the most I got. And then once I was married and got pregnant, I think I got up to 170. So I was never over 200 until later in my years, like in my 30s. Then at one time I got to 240. I've tried every kind of diet there was out there, I think. And I could always lose weight, but I can never keep it off. That's always been the pattern. So at 18, I started my first diet when I started working for the first time with a phone company. And from then on, it was one after another. And I wish I had known about IF a long time ago. It seems like it would have been so much easier on everybody concerned, but I hadn't heard about it. A friend of mine who always shares all the books that she comes across was back east, and her nephew had lost 50 pounds. And she had to call me while she's on vacation to tell me the name of this book. So I got it and read it, and then I was on to try it. And my spouse thought I was doing something terrible. I was going to ruin my metabolism, just like what we hear from some of the doctors for some of our people. And eventually she joined on, and she's lost quite a bit of weight too now. So, but it took about a year before her to accept it. But of all the things that I've done, this has really been the easiest. I haven't struggled like I have on some of the other programs where you're already always denying yourself something to eat. So once you're told you can't have something, that's all you can think about that you need to have. So you fight that all the time. And then it's calories counting, size of your fist, all those different kind of things that we've all gone through if anybody's had a weight problem. But this has been really nice. Well, I started September in 2017. And I read the Delay, Don't Deny, and I got the impression that you could eat anything you wanted to. Well, I did. Anything I wanted to, including sweets. And luckily, I lost weight, and it was continued for quite a while. And then as the holidays would show up, I'd eat more sugar, and then I'd go up and down. We'd do that little pattern that we did. That went on for 3 years. I did lose 40 pounds, but then I'd go up a little bit, and then I'd come down. So then we had friends that came from Idaho to visit, and they're very slender, and they snack a lot. Well, I started snacking, and they left, and I snacked for two to three more months afterwards. And I thought, I just can't keep doing this. So that's when I made a deal with myself that for my 80th birthday, I would be down at the weight I should be. So the only way I could accomplish that was first to admit I was a sugaraholic. And that was hard to do because I really loved it. I ate everything, but I was not content with one cookie. I would do, if I'm baking, I'd do six or seven. And that's my pattern. I would just continue on. So I knew I had to stop that. My mom was an alcoholic, so she told me it was the sugar that she was craving. And so obviously it sounded like that was me too, but I didn't like the taste of alcohol, or luckily I probably would have been in a different boat right now. But so I eliminated processed sugar, and then I thought I need to do something a little bit more. So I started 42-hour fast twice a week, and that got me really going. And probably 6 months, I was already going down and meeting my goal. So it's been a wonderful process. So
fabulous. That's fantastic, Karen. Well, great backstory that is. And, you know, that longevity that you're talking about, you started a long time ago now, and you sort of worked through it, and you've been up and down and through the mill, so to speak. And, you know, that message, you can eat whatever you like in the intermittent fasting community, you need to clarify that, because when Jen talks about that, there's eating whatever you want, and then there's eating whatever you want. There's two different types of versions of that. And Jen really clarifies that, and anybody that listens to the Audible version, if you listen to that first sample track on Audible, you'll hear Jen clarify that message. And so What she's saying is, you know, you can eat whatever you want in terms of, you know, stuff that's going to make you feel great and stuff's going to get you to your health goals. You need to decide what eating whatever you want means to you. And I think you've worked it out now, and the longer you've been doing this, now you've gravitated towards that higher quality food. You realize sugar was an issue. And I'm really proud of you for admitting on this podcast that you're a sugarholic, because it is hard. I know how hard that is, Karen. And that's a huge step for someone to take and talk about it in public and talk about it with their friends and their closest loved ones. It's a really hard thing to do. But once you do it, it's very, very freeing, and you start on the process of health and wellness. But Karen, let's strip it right back to the stats when you first started. Can you remember sort of what weight you were around then and that sort of thing?
192.
192. Okay. So you're looking at about 90-odd kilos there. And so for listeners out there, Karen, you're 80 years old. Is that right?
Yes, I am. As of last September.
All right. Well, you look amazing. I've got to tell you, first thing I saw you, I thought, well, this lady's 80. I've got some hope yet. Fantastic. It's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely love it. But let's talk about the early days of your fasting journey when you first started. What type of protocol were you doing, Karen, and why were you sort of doing that? Was it fitting your life at the time?
I think we pretty much started with OMAD. Two meals didn't work for me. When I did the 42s, then I did the two meals. It was a small one, but of course, in the beginning, you're just, you know, learning. And so I would overeat in that first meal instead of what I do now. And then I really wasn't hungry by the time I was supposed to have my second meal. But we still have that brain, whatever it is that we grew up with, breakfast, lunch, dinner, if you're hungry or not, you always ate. So that pattern was still coming through for me for the two meals. I'd eat that second one because I was supposed to have it, because you're supposed to feed yourself after the long fast. And now I don't do that. I start with protein and I just eat enough to make sure I'm doing fine. And then we have our meal within 6 hours after that.
Yep. Great. And so when you talk about, you know, being a sugarholic and that sort of thing, and you work that out of your system now, just run us through some of the processes that you took to get rid of sugar out of your life.
I just stopped it. I just went cold turkey. There was no playing around with it. I stopped and I just didn't have, it actually turned out to be the processed sugar goodies, you know, cakes, those kind of things, candy. And I had no more cravings. So that's what I tested on. If we got cucumber chip pickles, they have some sugar in them, and I still had no cravings, so I thought that was okay. So there's a few things like ketchup, we don't do much of it, but those kind of things that don't start cravings. But I write everything down that I eat for me, because I can't remember from one day to the next. So if I do end up having something, I can look back and say, okay, what did I have that could have done that? And I can eliminate that if it really causes a problem. But so far it hasn't.
Fantastic. I love that. And I always say to people, you know, write down your trigger foods, like work that out. Like when you see that correlation on the scale and you sort of think about, okay, what was it that I had? What is my issue? What's my body not responding to here, to that certain type of food? And after a while, you get a whole list of foods that are your trigger foods, and then you get a whole list of foods that don't sort of seem to have an effect. So if you can lean on the right side of the list and eat those foods that aren't spiking your sort of weight so much, but you really enjoy those foods, and that's important. You've got to enjoy what you eat, let's face it. But if something's not serving you, or if it's holding you back, or if you have an issue with it, like sugar, and sugar addiction can be debilitating. And addiction is like anything, Karen, whether you're a gambler or whether, you know, you're alcoholic, it all comes down to stopping the behavior. And in order to stop the behavior, a lot of people will say cut down, just reduce and all that, and moderate. But that doesn't work for a lot of people. And it certainly wasn't going to work for me, and it didn't work for you, because when you stop behavior cold turkey, that's when you start getting on top of it. And it's just working through that process. Did you find the cold turkey sort of the days after or the weeks after hard?
No, I found things that would replace it. In my past, I had to have a dessert, what you would call a true dessert, and a fruit or something like that was never a substitute. Now, and later on, that's what I learned to do. I'd have fruit, only I'd have heavy whipping cream, but not whipped, you know, just poured over applesauce or over bananas with cinnamon. And that would satisfy that feeling that I've had a dessert, but not cause a craving.
Yeah. And in the early days of intermittent fasting, Karen, did you have any struggles? Always like to ask people, because it's not always a straight line, is it? Sometimes it takes a bit of, you know, mental sort of fortitude to work through things and get on the journey. Did you find anything a struggle when you first started, or was it pretty smooth sailing apart from the fact that you were battling a bit of that sugar addiction issue?
Well, the sugar became continued to be a problem, but when I set my mind to something, I'm pretty strict about it. So that's helped me in this case. I've done nothing but clean fasting for all these years. I had to learn to drink black coffee. I wasn't a coffee drinker, but tea just got where I could hardly stand it anymore. And I'm not a big water drinker, so I have to force that. So I learned to drink coffee, and coffee was a cream and sugar thing that I had at a restaurant, sort of as a treat, but not every day. So now I have a half a cup of coffee and feel like a grown-up. And it's black. And it gives me some kind of taste. And that's the hardest thing that I don't fight it, but I want something that is good to drink that has some flavor. And only coffee or tea, which tea I don't like anymore, and water. So that's probably the hardest of the whole thing, is not having a nice drink that is full of sugar, you know, is what they are. And Graham, after watching that that sugar film that I saw was recommended, everything has sugar in it. And I used to drink bottled tea that was full of sugar to two or three a day. I wasn't so much into the pop, but oh my goodness, I was just feeding that sugar habit continually years and years ago, and for years.
Yeah, same here. And it's amazing, isn't it? Once we actually learn how much sugar is in our food, and that documentary you're talking about, that sugar film, the Australian filmmaker Damien Garneau, that really just about blew me off my chair. And I knew straight away, this is my problem. This is my problem. And when he visualizes it, when he sort of starts eating the actual sugar content of what's in the food, like a can of Coke or whatever, and then when I realized like a can of Coke had 10 teaspoons of sugar, and I thought, well, I'm eating like drinking six of these a day. That's like 60 teaspoons of sugar just in Coke. And then there was all the other stuff, the orange juices. And then when I added it up, I remember when I was going through the sugar addiction withdrawal to keep myself busy, I was trying to educate myself about it. And I realized I was having well north of 100 teaspoons of sugar a day in my diet and what I was doing. And it was just killing me. And now I probably have maybe less than six, I don't know, because it's really hard to get it to 0, 0, 0. Because as you said, so many things have sugar in it. And that's a challenge, isn't it, doing that?
Oh, terrible. Well, the sad part is they've put it in foods that were considered healthy. So what you read, what people are trying to tell each other to eat healthy. Well, if you still are working or busy and you buy things from the store, you buy something that we were told was healthy food, and they've filled it with sugar. So here you're just feeding that addiction that you have, thinking you're doing something well for yourself.
Yeah. Were you born in during the Second World War, Karen?
Yes, 1942.
1942, wow. Because, of course, after the war, food was short, wasn't it? And so, you know, people sort of putting substitutes in food and that sort of thing after the war years. And you would have seen a lot over your years, and I'm going to talk to you about that in a minute. But you mentioned in the eating window when you first started, you had that impression you could eat whatever you want. Then you sort of realized that wasn't working for you, particularly with the sugar. And now, over the last few years, how long did it take you to get to a point where you were happy where you were, and you started your maintaining phase of this journey?
About 10 months ago. So February, March of 22, I just went down in weight. I think once I did that, made those changes, I dropped, I think it was 28 pounds and got down. And it took me further down. 142 is what I was trying to get to. And I was at 147 when our friends came, and then I shot back up again to 160, but originally I was 192. So I had lost weight, so it wasn't that I put it all back on. But I was so surprised to be, I was 127 yesterday. Grandma, I haven't been, maybe my twins are 54. My grandson is 30, just turning 33. And he was like this big when I weighed 125 pounds once.
All right.
And I've been gone up from then. And that was going to one of those professional weight loss clinics that you go to. I can't even remember the name of it. Not a doctor's clinic, but where they give you the food and everything, and that's all you eat is what they give you. That's the only time I ever went down that far. But you can't do that the rest of your life.
No, so you can't. It's not sustainable, is it, that type of thing? But, I mean, you've had a big drop from where you started, of course. I mean, on your frame, you're talking about nearly 50 pounds and, you know, sort of down to about 58 kilos there, 127 pounds. And you look fantastic. You look sensational. I've got to ask you, like, you're an 80-year-old lady and, you know, with your friends and all that sort of thing in that sort of age group, you know, guys and gals in your sort of age group and your genre, how do you see yourself compared to them in terms of how your health is and compare themselves to the others in that sort of era?
Well, I have friends that we just had lunch together, and we've been friends since we were 14 years old. So we meet every once in a while. Only one has a weight problem, and she's very crippled up, and it's really hard on her, but we're all 80. And I think we're pretty good, but at church, the people that are my age, a lot of them are on a lot of medication for heart and diabetes and things like that. And you just want to just grab a hold of them, hug them, and tell them there's a better way, but you can't do that. And people don't say anything to me about my weight. Supposedly, they're not supposed to talk about that anymore or mention people's weight anymore. It's not like the old days where people would come up and tell them, well, you've lost a lot of weight. But my priest knows I'm working on it, so...
It's tricky, isn't it? How to share when you've got this thing bursting inside you. You want to get the message out. You want to share. You want to give that passion out, but you just sometimes you don't know how to go about it. And particularly after you lose a lot of weight and you're a healthy looking person and you're saying to an obese person that you've never met before, hey, I can help you. You know, I know this about intermittent fasting and all that. And you just can't do that. It's very confronting for them, and it's hard for you as well because you don't know how to go about it. So that's why I started this podcast. That's why I wrote the book. That's why I formed the Facebook group, because I thought, well, by doing that, and if I can get people involved and hear people's stories like yourself on this podcast, others can get involved and they can hear that it's possible and they can get some hope and inspiration. If somebody picks up my book in a thrift shop or they buy it on Amazon or whatever and they get going, fantastic. And that's what it's all about. But I think people too have to come to us, don't they? If they want some information and that, they have to sort of, you know, come to us rather than us sort of shove it down their neck all the time. Because there's nothing worse when somebody's preaching about something where previously they had really bad behavior. So it's got to be done in the right way, doesn't it, Karen?
It does. And I had a friend call me the other day. When I started this a long time ago, I mentioned that this is what I was doing. And she started and was struggling with it, I think, for quite a long time. And she texts me and she says, Karen, can you talk to me and maybe give me some, you know, some hints of what to do? And I said, well, let's meet for coffee, which we did. And we talked about it because she said she's just been in this plateau forever. And she's been fasting and still the weight wasn't coming off. So we talked and I just suggested some things, also told her about the film to see and maybe change your meals to, you know, early and late one day, every other day, just so you're not doing the same thing every day. That seems to stop people after a while. Your body gets used to you eating at this time all the time. So she did, and she said, she wrote me this end of the week, and she said, I just got out of the shower. She said, I'm standing in the nude and I'm crying because the scale moved 3.5 pounds. So she made some changes, and it was just enough to make her feel like there's hope.
Isn't that fabulous? Love it. You know, and it's sad too when we've all lost people in our life and we know they could have been in better health, and a lot of people aren't here today because simply weight killed them. That's the truth. That's the truth. And obesity killed them, you know, obesity related diseases, diabetes, heart attacks, stroke, all of that, all related to weight, a lot of it, you know, not all of it, but certainly a lot of it. And I think once we do find our health, and, you know, I have no doubt you're going to live to 100. I would put money on it right now because I see how healthy you're looking at the moment. And I think that's fantastic. But tell us also about the NSVs and the health benefits, the non-scale victories and the health benefits that have come for you in this past 5 years.
Well, I think I'd be worse off. I do have neuropathy in my feet. Luckily I'm not a diabetic, so therefore I don't have all that pain that comes with it, but I have the numbness, and that part is hard. So if I didn't have that, you'd see me doing all kinds of more things, because I do feel good. I do have good health, but it does stop me. I do a lot of baking for church and things like that, but that standing around or that driving just wears me out. Next day I'm tired. But that's because of the neuropathy. That's not because I'm not healthy. But I can't imagine what I would be like if I was carrying all that weight, trying to get up and down off my knees and things like that, if I was carrying the 65 pounds that I lost. So it's taken me 5 years to do this, but I did it right. It wasn't all at once, so I don't have the other problems. And the extra skin is disappearing a little bit. I'm going to have a lot of that still, but I think I am so much better off than I would have been. Mm. But see, I've been doing it for 5 years, so I have nothing to compare it to, because if I just all of a sudden lost this weight, a lot of people lose so much right off the bat, and they're really doing great. So, and they're younger, so they have a lot more energy. I never have felt that better up in the head feeling personally, but so we're all different. I don't feel any sharper mentally. I know my spouse keeps looking at me and I'm scaring her to death when I can't remember something. But then I talk to somebody my age and they say, it's normal, Karen, it's normal. Don't worry about it. So But you do worry about these things because you see so many things about it that, oh no, am I heading toward Alzheimer's? You know, that's a bigger fear for me. If I end up someplace, I want to have my mind with me. You know, that's scarier to me than any other kind of health issue.
Yeah. What kind of work did you do in your life, Karen?
I worked 30 years for the phone company. I did everything from what the typical job at 18 for women was, clerical work, into a typing pool. That's the kind of jobs women got back in those days. That would be 1961, I think I got my job. And then I worked my way up. By the time I retired, I was typing in the computers giving dial tone. So it was a long, you know, difference.
Crazy.
Women have more jobs with more responsibility, and women were now into the jobs that men had. So, but it took a long time. It took a long time.
Yeah, and rightly so. There's some amazing women out there in the corporate world for sure, and I speak to a lot of them, and they're just so inspiring. And as you know, we have probably 80% women in our Fasting Highway Facebook group, and some of the most inspirational fasters in the globe. And I'm really proud of all of them, and I'm proud to be associated with them. And one thing I wanted to ask you too is, you know, going back, so when you think about the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, when I look at photos of that era, I look at photos of people at the beach and everything else, or a documentary. I like to watch a lot of historical stuff. You didn't see a lot of obese people in these photos or these videos, you know, people walking around, that sort of thing. Everyone seemed to be relatively good shape and everything. And I think that's because back then, food was more scarce because you didn't have a fast food place on every single corner that they could just pop into and eat, or people didn't used to eat in their car a lot. So when you think about the evolvement of how people used to eat back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, as you were growing up to now, what's your sort of thoughts around that?
Well, we didn't have the money either to buy. And my mother was working at a regular Ernst Hardware downtown Seattle, making $1 an hour back in those days. So you didn't buy a lot of extra things. You came home with the things that were going to feed your family. And then I remember when there was the first drive-in, or it was pizza. I had already graduated from high school, so that was 1960. When they opened a pizza place, I'd never had pizza, and my friends said, "We're going to go for pizza. What's pizza?" So that was new. So that's how long that took. They had hamburgers at Dick's Drive-In, which is still famous in this area. It's been around all that time. It was there before, while I was in high school. And but other than that, we didn't have all those things. So, and if we did, it was a long ways away. Even to go to the grocery store, like a Safeway, you had to have a car to get there, or you had a little tiny grocery store down in two or three blocks away in the neighborhood where you could get a loaf of bread and you could get some hot dogs and you can get some cheese and things like that. But you weren't getting all the sweets other than the penny candy sort of thing.
Yeah. So, and now you can point a TV remote at the screen and order up some food and it's at your door within about 15 minutes. It's just crazy, right? Isn't it? How much more food is available now? It's just everywhere. I mean, you walk down the street, we see it everywhere, don't we? The bright lights, the fast food store were like a magnet to me at one point in my life, and I spent a lot of time in them. And now I don't even see them. I simply drive down the road, and it's almost like they don't exist because my mindset has changed totally around how I see them and how I feel now compared to the, you know, depths of sort of food addiction that I was in. But Karen, also wanted to talk about this maintenance phase now. 10 months you mentioned, you know, sort of how have you found that mentally in the mindset different to when you were sort of trying to lose the weight and working out how you're going to have this plan now for the rest of your life?
I think the biggest thing that I'm still working on is knowing when I'm full and stopping. That seems to be one of the biggest things for me. I still end up going away from the table full, which you're not supposed to be full that way, like a Thanksgiving dinner. So it doesn't kick in for me like some people know. But I'm still doing fine. I'm maintaining it. And I do weigh on Mondays and I weigh on Fridays for if I've got carried away on the weekend and not with sugars, but just overeating, or during the week. And it gives me an idea. And I'm usually up. If I go up, it's 1 or 2 pounds. But I take it off right then and there. I don't want to add to it, because pretty soon it was 4, 6, 8, whatever. And maintenance, it's fantastic the way we eat now. We eat so much better. Our grocery bill, as you know, cuts in half when we're not eating 3 meals a day. And so therefore we get better things. We buy better quality. I went out with my friends to a lunch, and it's shocking what it costs, because we don't eat out very much, especially with the pandemic that was here. We just didn't go out. So we've only gone out a couple times since then. But I got a tiny little toasted cheese sandwich and a little cup of clam chowder, over $17. And it wasn't even that good. I told Jan when I got home, I could have eaten so much better at home what I wanted. And so I'm not even drawn to go out and eat, because it's a fortune now. We have the money. It's not that. It's just that it seems like such a waste for what you get for your money now.
Yeah, I agree. Went out for dinner last night, actually, to a beautiful French restaurant to celebrate a family birthday. Lovely it was. Food was great. But I said to my wife this morning, you know what? I have the best kitchen in town right here, and you prepare the best food in Australia. I don't need to go to all these fancy restaurants, because everything you have always cooked for me, you ever given me or helped me cook or learn to cook, it's always been better than any fancy restaurant. And, you know, it's nice to go out now and again. It really is. And, but here in Australia, our cost of living is way out of control, particularly here in Perth and Western Australia. It's a very expensive capital city to live in. So, yeah, a lot of people here don't do that. It was really interesting what you said about people never had the money. But the other thing was, they just didn't have the accessibility, did they? If you watch a really great TV show called History 101, there's a story of how the fast food pyramid grew. And you can see the correlation through the decades to how the obesity rate started to climb. And I think there's a real issue there as how much further. I mean, like I said, you can point a TV remote now out at a screen and order food. I mean, how much further can this go? What's going to be next? Drones delivering food to our door? All this sort of stuff's happening. So, yeah, I don't know where it's going to go, Karen, but I just hope people sort of latch on to health and wellness. But I think we're turning the full circle now. And by people doing intermittent fasting, I think what we do is we make food scarce. So we're going back to that full circle again to our ancestors where food was scarce.
Well, I know... I used to hide food. I don't know if you ever did that.
Yes.
You know, I'd buy 6 donuts on the way home and eat all 6 of them. Nobody knew I had them. And when I was married, I remember one time making those lemon bars that all the women, at least in the States, used to take to baby showers and things like that. I'd make that, eat half of them, finish them off, make another batch before my husband got home so he didn't know that I had done that. So I was... I don't know what you call that, a sneaky eater or whatever, but it was always sugar that I did,
That's called closet eating. That's what it's called. Closet eating. I was a closet eater for 40 years of my life. I used to eat in my car. Nobody could see me. Hey, who can see me? I'm going to eat away. I used to hide it. I used to hide the wrappers. I used to hide the evidence from my family. I used to always pay in cash because I didn't want to see it come up on the bank statements. How many times a day I was going to the fast food stores, I was doing things like eating a loaf of bread, and then I'd go down to the shop and I'd buy another one to replace it, so it didn't look like that I'd eaten that loaf of bread, and my family didn't know. I was stuffing wrappers down the back of the couch. I was doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things. My car was a disgrace. You'd open the glove box, there'd be food in there. I used to carry a bag of chips under my seat just in case I starved on the way to work. So I was a real closet eater. You know, I'd be at the office and people would come around and they'd have a birthday shout or something, a party, and they'd have cakes and what have you. And I'd say, oh, no, I'm okay, thanks. No, it's all right. Or, you know, pretend that I was like trying to control my weight, which was a joke in itself. But then as soon as everybody went home, I was the guy going to the fridge to eat the leftovers. So, yeah, that closet eating was a huge issue for me. And I think you've admitted 2 things in this podcast. You're a sugar addict and you're a closet eater. And now you've got those things out of your system and you talk about it, you're really getting on the path to health and wellness because of it.
Oh, yeah. I wait now till my time is to eat. If I'm really, really hungry and I feel a little weak, sometimes that happens, I just open my window and start my OMAD at that time. So it's not always the same time every day anyway, because as soon as I finish my meal, I close my window. I don't have this hours in between, because I knew I would snack or do something. And that's what I had to learn not to do in the beginning. So there's just things that I know is best for me, and I'm trying to do that, but it's not a struggle now, other yeah. than I might hunger longer.
Yeah, well, there's two types of hunger, isn't there, that we learn?
Yeah.
There's that head hunger, and then there's that belly hunger. I mean, you would know over the years, you know the difference between, hey, I'm hungry, I could chase a horse and eat the jockey and all the rest of it. And then there's that hunger where it's just, you know what, I'm not feeling that great today. I'm just a bit unsteady. I feel like I'm just not in a good place, and body doesn't feel weak. Well, that's the time to listen to your body. And you're probably moving into a stage now, Karen, I'd suggest, is more of an intuitive type faster, where you're in tune with your body now. So you're eating to your true hunger signals rather than just for the sake of it. And that's what we find with intermittent fasting over time. We find our true hunger signals. So you do become more intuitive in those windows the longer you do maintain. And the number of years now that I've been doing this, and I find that my never 2 days are the same now. Like, I'm not a rigid 22 and 2. I don't have a clock. I don't have an app. I don't have anything. I just eat in a pattern of time. When I'm hungry, I eat till I'm satisfied and full, not stuffed. I eat high quality food, what makes me feel my greatest, and then I stop. And that's a simple process for me. And that's what I love about intermittent fasting, because it's so simple, isn't it? And it's sort of terms of, you know, we're either fasting or eating, but the mental challenges are a lot different, aren't they, for a lot of people?
Yeah. And what's wonderful about this is everybody's different. We can all do our own way, and nobody's telling us there's one way to do it. Other than the clean fast is the only thing we really have to follow.
That's correct. And I think that's important to note, that, you know, the clean fast is a foundation, isn't it? And for people sitting there listening, thinking, what's a clean fast? What we're talking about there in the fasting period is just having things like black coffee, black tea, water, plain sparkling water, plain green tea, no flavors, nothing else, no sort of things like having cans of soda, no putting butter in your coffee, no putting cream and milk in your tea or coffee while you're fasting. You can do that in your eating window, but while you're fasting, you want to be fasting clean, because you're not fasting at all. And you want to be able to give your organs a rest from digestion, and you want that sort of process to work for you to get the maximum benefit from it. Because what happens is, when you do things like dirty fast, your fast will become much harder. Don't you find that, you know, when you see and read people in the groups and they talk about everything's hard, but when you ask them if they're clean fasting, sometimes they say, well, not really.
Well, sometimes I think they don't understand that part. They think they're not having something, but anything that makes your insulin start doing its job. But I didn't know all about that business, that your insulin has a job to do, and when it's working all the time, the rest of your body can't do the work it needs to do. So there's a choice that you have to make. You have to give your body a chance to do its healing and everything else. But if you don't, then I think that's why a lot of people have other health issues.
Yeah, look, I just started coaching and mentoring people privately, and anybody that wants to, that they can go to the website, www.thefastinghighway.com, and come and book a call with me, because not everybody's on sort of groups like, you know, Facebook, or they're not on Instagram. A lot of people don't want to share their sort of issues with weight and health, that sort of thing, in public. So, you know, some people just want to get their information somewhere else. But, you know, I think when you stay plugged into a Facebook group like the Fasting Highway, there's a lot of support there, isn't there, Karen?
There is. And the thing is that we can tell them anything. Maybe we've done something and like breaking your fast, but we're not going to put you down for it. We've all had something that we've had to overcome, and we're just there to listen. And if we can help you make a suggestion that maybe worked for us, but might not work for you, but somebody else might have a suggestion that will work for you. So it's wonderful. Graham, it's wonderful having this support group.
Yeah, it is. And what I love about it, it's a global village. We've got people from all over the world and over 100 countries there. And we don't do mean, we don't do spiteful. We have very good moderators that run the group, and it's just fantastic. We have a lovely ethos and a lovely sense of community, and it's a safe sharing space. So yeah, it's great. But yeah, as I said, some people just need a little bit of extra accountability, or they want some extra help and they want to get going in all phases of their journey. I have people that are beginners, people that are on the journey, or even people that are maintaining and losing their way a bit. So there's always just that little bit of help, or sometimes we need, whether that's from a support group or some private coaching from a person like myself. then you've got sort of avenues out there, and that's great. But Karen, I want to ask you a question too about exercise. You mentioned a problem with your foot and that. Over the last 5 years, have you done any sort of exercise much at all?
No, I haven't. Well, I did before. In the beginning, I went to the gym and I did the machines there. But that came with our insurance plan, so we were able to do that. And then that stopped. And with my legs the way they are now, no, when it gets warmer, I'll start walking a little bit. But it's been really hard because it fatigues my legs so much that then I'm useless the next day, and I don't want that either. So,
no, be gentle on yourself, that's for sure. But let's talk about the mindset of intermittent fasting. We touched on earlier the mental side of it, because the thought process of when you hear about intermittent fasting, okay, you're going to eat once a day. And when we sort of qualify that once a day, right? So we're talking about OMAD here, one meal a day. But for me, that's a restaurant style, sitting down, having an opener, or what you would call a starter there in the States, waiting a while, reflecting on that, taking a pause, letting that do its work, and just ease back and reflect on it. Because a lot of times some people say to me, they'll open their windows and they'll just go 100 miles an hour and they'll just eat, and they can't stop. But when I say to them, look, if you just have something a bit higher in fat when you open your window, take a pause, and then before you go into your main meal, and sometimes I'll have a dessert. And for me, that's something like some berries and some yogurt, that type of thing. I don't eat sweet treats and all that sort of thing very often at all. But it's important to know that OMAD is described as that. Is that the sort of style that you would do now?
Might open with some Swiss cheese, you know, and then in the process of getting things ready. But I still keep it within probably half an hour to an hour, but I'm enjoying my meal. I'm not doing this like we used to do, as much as I could get down before. It is totally different because I'm contented. I've slowed down. I used to be the first one done. Now I'm not. I enjoy food. I enjoy more things. We have leftovers, put them in the freezer, and I never used to like leftovers. Now they're wonderful because they were good to begin with. And so I make homemade bread that I do eat, and because I don't get a reaction from it, I don't get a weight gain from it. I will if I plan to eat a half a loaf at one sitting, but I don't. So I have been really careful with that. What's nice, not having the sugar things in the past, if there was something in the house that was sugar, people might not understand. It called my name till it was gone. So at work, if they had a potluck and there were all these pies out, I could not work the rest of the day. I was in there back and forth and back and forth till I knew that pie was gone. So I don't have that problem not eating. I think I would, so I don't mind. It's just like an alcoholic. I don't take that first bite because I'm afraid I'd be on a toot for either 2 days or 3 months. And that's how I treat myself, because I just have that reaction to sugar. I don't want to take a chance. It's not worth it to me. I get those enjoyments out of dried figs or dried prunes or peanut butter on prunes or bananas and peanut butter on them. I get enjoyment out of those kind of things where I would never have gotten that out without having a pie and ice cream or something like that. So my whole world has changed. I don't know. The only thing that I notice is my taste has changed and things aren't always as good as they used to be. Is that a problem with you at all?
No, I'd say the opposite, actually, because when I was, you know, heavily obese, closet eater, addicted to fast food and sugar, I never tasted food, Karen. It was just volume to me. I was just shoveling it in, you know. I never took time to savor it. And then what I noticed about the first year of intermittent fasting, I started eating a high quality food, and it got even a higher quality as the years went on. And now it's like a theatrical experience for me. I taste it and I savor it, and just the flavors flow through me, because I'm eating a lot of foods in the last sort of 3 or 4 years that when I was obese, I wouldn't even think about eating. I wouldn't have thought about eating asparagus. I wouldn't have thought about eating, you know, half the things that I eat now, but I do, because I know that it's serving me well. And now I eat what makes me feel my greatest, not whatever my mind wants, because I know what my mind wants deep in that psyche, going back a few years when I was obese like you. We know what our mind's going to tell us, but it's what our body needs is important. And I think once you turn full circle and you get yourself into that mindset, then it just becomes self-fulfilling. It's automatic. You don't even think about it. You go to the supermarket, you shop completely differently. So for you and your partner, do you, when you go shopping, do you find out a different experience now in your shopping cart?
Yes, because we don't even bother going down the aisles and looking at the things that I used to look at, you know, and there's no desire for them. That's the interesting part. Even when I'm hungry, I'm looking at something that I really want to eat that's really good, whole. When a lot of times you're hungry when you go shopping, which is usually a bad thing to do, go grocery shopping when you're hungry. But and you're grabbing the chips and all the different things that you used to grab. So you're I notice when I get to the checkout, my cart looks different than some other people's carts, where they're full of all the nummies that I would have done, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it now.
Isn't that amazing? What a freeing feeling that is. And I think it's education about, you know, knowing how to read nutrition labels. But basically, if it's in a packet, you know, there's a flashing light there for a start. But shopping around that perimeter certainly helps, particularly if you've got an issue with sugar and you're a sugar addict and you're trying to beat that. Then I found by just shopping around the perimeter, starting off the fruit and veg section, going to the meat section, going to the dairy section, and then your cart starts to look totally different, doesn't it? And then I found that if I was tempted in an impulse thing very early days, I would stop and just stand there and reflect for 15, 20 seconds before I put that thing in my trolley, or as you call them, carts, because it's that pause sometimes can stop us in our tracks. And that's what we need to do if we have to do it. Because as I said earlier in the podcast, and you alluded to it, some of us cannot eat whatever we want that's in that supermarket, because about 80% of it is just no darn good for us. And we know that now. And so now we make different decisions and we make better purchases and our health is improved because of it. So it's not really rocket science, that part of it, is it, Karen?
No. And it's a whole new world too, because I've never had the word that you're slender, you're thin my whole life. And now that my wife keeps saying, boy, you're nice and thin now. You look really good in that. You know, and that's new. And that's, I don't want to give that up.
Lovely. How lovely is that? And you mentioned your wife there when you first started. She was a bit skeptical and that sort of thing. And now she's jumped on board. And how many years has she been doing it with you now?
4 years. And she hasn't made her goal yet, but she still eats sweets. She's not driven like I was. But, you know, and we do our own plan. And we have a pet sitting business. So if I'm my time to eat and she's not home yet, I go ahead and eat, and the same with her. So, and if we can eat like on the weekends together, we do that. It's if usually I have to wait a little longer. She's not ready to eat before 1 o'clock, and sometimes I'm ready at 10:30 in the morning, you know. So, yeah. She's doing her program, which is ours, and I'm just a little bit stricter, I think, and always have been. So, but I'm not having any cravings. That's the thing that controlled me before, was the cravings. And without that kind of sugar base in my system, I'm not fighting that at all. That's such a relief, Graham.
Yeah, I know the torment of that. And it's torment, isn't it? Like it just nags at you, you know, go on, have it, go on, have it. And it's like somebody sitting on your shoulder, and you got good Karen and bad Karen sitting on your shoulder, and they're saying to each other, no, I'm right. And they're trying to force you into doing something you don't want to do. And I've often talked about when I was a fast food addict, it was like my car was on autopilot. I'd be steering it, but for some reason I wasn't end up in the drive-through buying food. But I was sitting there going, no, I know this is bad for me. I know it's killing me. This addiction is killing me. And there I was ordering it. I'd pull out, drive up the road another hour or so, do the same thing again. And it was like my car was taking me straight in there. And now my mindset is totally different. And that's the thing. We've got to work through the mental issues and the mindset part as well, because that's important. Because intermittent fasting, as we said, it is a simple process. Either we're fasting or we're feasting. But there's so many other things we've got to work through. And I like to call my maintenance now vigilance without obsession. That's how I see maintenance, vigilance without obsession. And I think that's a good way to live our lives now.
Yeah. Well, and what's really been nice is when we went away this summer to Idaho, our friends who had come our way, they eat, you know, two or three times a day, and they snack a lot. But they were willing to have their main meal when we had our OMAD. It was fantastic. We were there 2 weeks and were able to eat, and we'd fix it or they'd fix it. And that was their main meal, and it worked for them also. And then if they ate at different times, didn't bother us in the least.
Now, how lovely is that? Yeah, you know, same with my daughters. They were skeptical when I first took it up, and now they'll ring me and they'll say, "Hey, Dad, when's your window? You know, want to meet for a, you know, coffee at a cafe or something?" And they're really, you know, sort of they fit me in their lives and that sort of thing, which I think is great. And I think when our partners and those closest to us, they just accept what we do after a while because they see how healthy we are, they see how well we are, and then they start saying, "Well, you know, I might start doing this as well." And I know some of my friends who were my biggest critics in the early days, they're all confirmed intermittent fasters, and they're telling everybody in sundry that about it as well, you know, and flick it out by book left, right, and center to them. So yeah, it's amazing how people turn. But I always say to people, do you for you. That's the bottom line. You have to do you for you,
right? And you need the support of your doctor, and my doctor is just thrilled with this, just thrilled with this, what I've been able to do. He's been taking care of me probably 20 years, so he's seen all the different levels that I've done, all the different programs I've tried that I thought were going to work. My priest is the same. She went on one that I had a long time ago, and I said, when I came in with this one, I said, I found it. This is the one that's going to work. She says, I've heard you say that before, and it has, and here I am 5 years later. But
how is that?
It's great.
How good? How good is that? Your doctor, 20 years, seeing you at all these levels of different weights and various stages of health. And here you are at 80 years old. And I always say to people, you know, you're never too old to start intermittent fasting. Because I've had people in their 40s and 50s say to me, "Oh, Graham, you know, I'm too late to change my ways now. I'm just going to eat what I want. And I don't care if I'm, you know, obese. I'm not worried about it, you know." And I say, okay, that's what you want to do. But, you know, and others have said, well, isn't it too late? And I'm going to send them this podcast when it comes out. I'm going to say, listen to this.
Never too late. Now,
no,
I don't
way.
Want spending my days taking 13 pills, which I have a friend that does. She brings out a box this big with all these pills and health pills and different things. And I hate taking pills, and my doctor knows it, so he doesn't give me anything that I have to take a pill unless I absolutely have to do that. So
yeah, I know. And I go to friends' places, and you go into their bathroom, and they have these pill boxes with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with all these various pills. And they go, man, you take a lot of pills. And they say, oh, we got various pills, blood pressure, this, you know. And I go, wow, I'm very fortunate. I don't take any medication myself, zero. You know, I'm very, very lucky, and I feel fortunate. I'm just coming up 60 years old. You got 20 years on me, and I feel like I am lucky that I don't have to have medication anymore. But the way I was heading, I was probably going to be taking 15, 20 pills a day for sure, just to keep alive. And I think what we're doing for ourselves, Karen, has been not only freeing, but it's been life-changing. And I think we have a lot of things to look forward to.
We do. And thanks to you and your group that helps all these people that are coming in. How many members now?
We have about nearly 9,000 members from all over the world. And we started with two people, just myself and my wife. You know, it's growing. Yeah, it's growing quickly. And then, you know, other things. And, you know, thousands of people around the world have got the Fasting Highway book now. And, you know, people are coming in. I started the private coaching and mentoring because I had so many people asking me. And it was just a time thing for me. I had to put some structure in place around that. So, yeah, that's going well. And I'm really, my passion is to share this with people. So, yeah, thanks for your question. But just before we go, Karen, if you're sitting there in a cafe in your local area with some friends and they're saying, you know what, Karen, we want to get some intermittent fasting advice, what would you tell them? Or what sort of words of wisdom would you share about IF?
First, I think I'd tell them to get the books. I think you need to read it. You need to read it first to understand what it's all about, and not copy me, but just find out what's there. And there's so many out there now. Yours simplifies it, and Jen's was great. That's what got us started, and we've gotten the other two. But and we also did Dr. Fung's, but it's a little bit harder. And so much of the the groups that do those days and weeks of fasting sort of things, which is not us. That's what I like about our group. I think 42 is the max that people think about in this group, 36, but that doesn't fall at the right time for me. I don't want to eat at 10 o'clock at night. So,
That's just a safety thing, really. It's like, you know, if you're doing very, very long fast, we just say, you know, make sure you're supervised. And that could be your partner supervising you or whoever. But, you know, hopefully your doctor gets involved if people are doing very, very long fast. But like I said before, we don't judge anybody for what protocol they do. And we just want you to do it safely and that sort of thing. But Karen, thank you for joining me today. I can't tell you how inspiring you've been. I really want to catch up with you in another year's time to see how the maintaining's going. And my regards to your wife and everybody there. And so thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for asking. And you take care.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Oh, thank you so much, Karen. What a wonderful story. Absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. And a new living proof that you're never too old to take stock of your health. And I commend you on everything that you've done. And now you're living your best life. And I cannot wait to talk to you in 6 to 12 months' time to see where you are. And thank you once again for sharing your very, very inspiring intermittent fasting story with us. Okay, folks, as also heard on the podcast there, you can come and join us in the Fasting Highway Facebook community. Or if you're looking to get some one-on-one help, and your Facebook and Instagram isn't so much you go, you can do that by going to my website, www.thefastinghighway.com. You can book a coaching call with me. All times you see will be in your local time zone and the relevant charges there. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.